Okay, all set. So how many of you are working with compliance? Okay, so that's a good number of people who are familiar with the subject. That's always good to have. Today we're going to talk about the new compliance features in Exchange, SharePoint, and Office. Some of it in Link too. We'll go over that. So, what are your customer needs for compliance? What do you want to do? When we say the word compliance, it kind of gets a lot of meanings. Different people have different ideas about what compliance means. So, first of the things is you want to govern your data. You want to make sure that the data that you have in various places is retained for a certain amount of time. What people refer to as information lifecycle. When it comes to email, it's called email lifecycle or ELC. But now that extends also into SharePoint, where we have all these document repositories. We have websites, we have lists, and all those things that SharePoint can store. And so they can be given their own life cycle where you say how long you want to retain these things. Then there is the concept of immutability, is when I'm preserving things for a later date, for e-discovery, when I need to reproduce my records, I need to make sure that these records are not something that people can tamper with. And it goes back to the concept of archiving for email, where you had a separate box, and you took your email from Exchange, and you put it in some other archiving product or service, right? A lot of companies do that. A lot of you probably work with such products or third-party services. And then when you have to go and search, you go and search in that archive. And it lets you search the email and attachments and so on. And users cannot modify that. So that was the whole concept of immutability. We'll go a little bit over what Exchange does with it. E-discovery. So why do we retain data? It's purely because business needs and regulatory requirements. Different companies have different regulations applied to them. Some keep email around for three years. Some keep it for a longer period, 7 years, 10 years, or what have you, right? Now, once you get an e-discovery request, you're going to be able to produce this email or this document or this web page or whatever piece of information you have. And you should be able to prove that nobody tampered with this. If anybody tried to edit that document, whether it's a user, malicious, or otherwise, that data that you want to discover is protected. So that's the whole concept of immutability that we'll go over, and why we do this as e-discovery. So how do we do this? For content management, within Exchange, we introduced archiving in Exchange 2010. We go a step further in Exchange 2013 and Exchange Online, the new Exchange. What's called the in-place archive is the same personal archive that we introduced in Exchange 2010. We'll go over some of the things that you can do with it. One of the other things that you need to think about is documents that now, in this consumer-driven IT world, users carry around on their computers. And, you know, how do we control these, how do we synchronize these, or how do we make sure that they're discoverable and so on. The other thing is spreadsheets. We'll go over a little bit of, you know, the kind of issues that people face when exchanging documents in Office and how to avoid those. Moving on to data governance, we'll talk about some native data loss prevention features in Exchange called DLP. We'll talk about automated retention of content, both in Exchange and in SharePoint. How some of these policies work, how do you preserve data using different types of hold across Exchange, across SharePoint, and Link. And that whole story coming together, what started with, you know, just legal hold in Exchange 2010, how this thing comes together, we'll take a look. And finally, not only being able to hold all this, but now having a single console to be able to do e-discovery across all these data repositories, whether it's your Exchange email, whether it's your SharePoint data, and whether it's your Link conversations and meetings and so on. So when it comes to archiving, what Exchange provides as the archive mailbox is a seamless experience where users don't need to worry about where the data resides. You can move data from a primary mailbox to an archive, and it's all pretty seamless using an archiving policy. And when the data moves to the archive, it maintains a similar structure of folders that it did in the primary mailbox. Okay? So users don't have difficulty finding data. Now, this is compared to, you know, stubbing that third-party software does and leaves plenty of stubs in the primary mailbox, and user clicks on it, then it goes to that third-party repository, which requires an Outlook plugin. It may not work in Outlook web app, and so on. So this is all native. It works seamlessly in Outlook 2010, Outlook 2007, and Outlook 2013, and also in Outlook web app. Then the ability to search. So back when we called what a large mailbox was 25 megabytes back in, you know, Exchange 5.5 maybe, and Hotmail, I remember, was a time it had a limit of 2 megabytes. And that's just unimaginable today because people's mailboxes are now in gigabytes. And it's partly due to our habits of using email, right? I'm sending attachments to my email. Everything is in my email. So the ability to search quickly, whether using Outlook or Outlook web app, across your primary and archive mailboxes, that's something new in Exchange 2013 and Exchange Online. So you can search either your entire mailbox, including the archive, or just the primary mailbox. These are some of the options. And from one place, you get to search. Finally, the conversation view, which has become so popular with Exchange 2010 and Outlook 2010, it spans your primary and archive mailbox, and that's just such a great convenience to have, to not have these things show up as separate threads in the primary and the archive mailbox. Then comes to the admin experience, where, again, it's pretty seamless for the admin. You're using the same tools that you use to manage Exchange, the Exchange Administration Center, EAC, the new web-based console, or PowerShell, if you'd like. And just like you provision your primary mailbox, you can provision the archive, enable it, disable it, move the archive mailbox, and so on. So thanks to this web-based console, it's much easier than before. Now, you can also provision archive in the cloud, where your primary mailbox is on-premises and the archive resides in the cloud. And that also is done from the same place using the same enable button. Next, we move on to team mailboxes. And team mailboxes allow you to collaborate across Exchange email threads and all the documents that we keep on exchanging as attachments compared to the documents that we store in SharePoint. And it brings it all together. So if you have, for example, a project, you provision a team mailbox for that project. And now all the documents that you store in SharePoint in that project site are going to show up in your Exchange mailbox. So all this comes together, whether using Outlook or Outlook Web App. And the documents stored in SharePoint do show up in your mailbox. Now, a view of your project-related email is also rendered in SharePoint. So whether you want to go to SharePoint and use it that way, or whether you want to go to your mailbox and use it, it shows a consistent view across both these. Now, with the new Office, you can create documents directly in your SharePoint repository, which gives you a little bit more control rather than users creating documents on their desktop and then selectively uploading whatever they want on SharePoint. They can drag and drop files to, I think it skipped one slide, drag and drop files directly into the SharePoint library. They can sync their local document repository with SharePoint. But most importantly, on the SharePoint side, you can see who they're sharing a document with, and that's important for your records management. Ability to access your documents from mobile devices is another huge thing for customers, for users. And with SkyDrive Pro, you can make sure that these documents are not only synced, but you have some amount of control over what gets synced. It's all residing in your SharePoint. It's all discoverable. Next, the new Office apps, they all have ability to, if you go into the backstage view, not only can you tag your documents, you can categorize the documents. You can apply protection to these documents. Now, what kind of protection can you apply? One of the things we'll take a look in a later slide is, have you had run into issues where you send documents to somebody and all the embedded data, stuff like notes and things, go out with the document? There's some very well-publicized cases where things that shouldn't have left your organization inadvertently did and gets published and so on. So using Inspect Document, you can basically control these kind of issues, and you can prevent some kind of data leakage and make sure that only the properties that need to go out when you're sending a document out, only that gets sent. Now, managing properties, versions, and workflow for the document set as a whole, you can basically keep a tab on not just one, but a collection of documents within SharePoint. Coming to spreadsheets, so the kind of concerns people have with spreadsheets, you can hide cells, you can hide a whole row, you can hide a spreadsheet, one sheet in a whole spreadsheet file. And when this data gets sent out, it could result in information that shouldn't be leaving the organization. Things like broken links, things like negative formulas, which is all functionality related, but most importantly, invisible cells and hidden spreadsheets. So again, you can go to your Inspect Document view in the backstage and prevent these kind of things from happening. You're now able to audit spreadsheets before sending them out. You can compare two documents. And for mission-critical spreadsheets, particularly those related to financial transactions and so on, this ability to audit your spreadsheet becomes very important. You can basically do an analysis of your workbook, identify all the dependencies, if there's any external data in the workbook that is being linked to, and so on. track changes for regulatory compliance. And so on. So moving on to exchange, and that's where most people are who are familiar with compliance will focus on, is data governance, the ability to retain data, which is done using retention policies. Now, these policies allow you to manage not only your storage, because you don't want your email to collect over a period of time and result in, you know, really humongous mailboxes. But besides storage, there is risk from collecting all that data over the number of years. If you leave it to users, they would never delete stuff. I don't delete a lot of stuff, you know. So everybody is guilty of that because we always perceive some information is very important to me. I want to keep it, and I want to access it even 5 years later. And then it grows so much that you don't want to clean up your mailbox, right? Because cleaning up mailbox, mail by mail by mail, takes a lot of time. So this thing automates your retention. So there's delete policies, and then there is archiving policies, which automatically move data to the archive mailbox. Now, the workflow for the users. So regardless of what kind of organization you are, there's an organization that says, I want all my email to be retained for 7 years, no more and no less. And so you cannot, you can say the user has no say in this and have policies based on that. But a lot of organizations say, okay, most of my data is going to be retained for 7 years, but I want users to be able to decide if they're getting things like newsletter subscriptions, where the value is only maybe 1 week, 2 days, 3 days. We get plenty of email like that. I want to delete it, allow the user to tag. So users can do this using Outlook or Outlook web app. They can tag emails to be deleted. They can tag emails to be moved before the archive policy on the mailbox is going to move it. So if the archive policy is going to move it in 2 years, the user can say, hey, move this message, you know, sooner or later than 2 years. Now, how do users know when the messages are going to move? So first of all, each message is going to display in the message properties in Outlook and Outlook web app when a message is going to get deleted, what you see on right below the to field up in the message. So whenever a user, if they have provision with policies to decide when a message should be moved or deleted, that field is going to show them what exact policy is. The second screenshot you see on the front is the folders properties, where it's showing you the move and archive policies. So here, messages in that folder are going to move to the archive in 6 months, and they're going to be deleted based on the folders properties, which here is, I think, 30 days. Track changes. So part of compliance is to be able to track what the administrator is doing, the commands that you run, or the things that you do in Exchange Administration Console. They get audited automatically out of the box. Okay. Now you can go and track these changes, whether you know mailboxes were moved or deleted or any other configuration changes occurred, transport rules were changed, somebody ran an e-discovery search, somebody put data on hold. All that is auditable, and it shows up in this audit reports, all in that easy web-based console. Now let's take a look at data loss prevention. Now this is a feature in Exchange 2013 and Exchange Online. And what I'm going to do here is go to my Exchange Administration Console. Just give me a second here. I'm having some password issues. Okay, there we go. So let's go ahead. This is my Microsoft Office 365 console from where I go to Exchange Admin. And this is what you would also see in your on-premises Exchange deployments. So I come here into Compliance Management, which is a single console for all compliance features. Compliance Management, let's go to Data Loss Prevention. And the issue that I'm trying to solve here is prevent leakage of financially sensitive information, things like credit card numbers, bank routing numbers, and so on. What Exchange allows you to do with DLP is if you were using transport rules in Exchange 2010, it was a very simplistic view. You specified a keyword, we allowed you to do things with that message that contained the keywords. Things like block a message, return it with an NDR, add a prefix to it. What we're doing now with DLP is an evolution of transport rules, where you have a policy package where you define what kind of information you want to detect. You can build some fairly complex rules, but most importantly, what we do is we ship a whole bunch of templates that you can use. So let's go and take a look at these templates and how easy it is to block sensitive information from leaving your organization. So let's create a new DLP policy, and I'm going to show you two ways of doing this. So first way is you go ahead and do a DLP policy from a template. Let's call it block credit cards. Provide a description here. And here are the templates. There are about, I think, 40 templates, DLP templates that are shipped. Things like, you know, Australian financial data, ranging from Canadian financial data, French, German, Japanese, Saudi Arabia, UK, and so on. And here's US financial data. So I can just take this template that says US financial data and decide to block all email that goes outside your organization that may contain this financial data. So let's click on more options. Now you can do three things with DLP policies. You can choose to show users with Outlook 2013 a policy tip. If you've been using Outlook 2010, you're probably familiar with mail tips. Things like if a distribution list contains more than 500 members, show the person a tip saying, hey, you're emailing too many people. So when you hit reply all, do you want to do things like that? So that was mail tips. This is similar. It's called a policy tip, and it's going to alert your user saying, hey, you're sending financial information or whatever you define here outside the organization. Do you really want to do this? You can test this out with or without policy tips, or you can enforce it. And obviously, when you enforce it, it's going to block completely. If you don't enforce it, it still allows the user to override. So let's click on enforce and go ahead and save. And that's all it takes to create a DLP policy to block financial data from leaving your organization. Fairly simple. Now, if you wanted to get a little fancier, you could, once that gets out of the screen, we can take a look at that. You can basically create those rules manually. So let's take a look at new custom DLP policy. let's say, block credit cards specifically. Okay. And I save it. I don't do anything. I just go ahead and save this. This creates a policy package which I can then go ahead and edit. So let's go ahead and edit this. And here are the rules that you can, I think we opened the wrong one. U.S. financial override. Okay, so let's take a look. No rules are defined here. Okay, now I say I don't want to block all financial data. I have some very specific things I want to target. So we go to new rule, and you're going to create a rule for credit cards. And the rule to select is when sensitive information is detected. When the recipient is outside the organization. When the recipient is located outside the organization. And then you can add a condition. The sender is the subject or body contains whatever words or keywords that you're looking for. Matches text patterns, which is your regular expressions, includes any of these words and includes these text patterns. And let's go take a look at block credit card, TEPS, DLP, go to rules. Notify sender when sensitive information is sent outside the organization. That's what we're looking for. Okay, so this basically cans it all. You're saying the recipient is located outside the organization, message contains sensitive information, and you can define what types of information. So if you remember, previously we simply had a policy that said U.S. financial data. Now here you can go ahead and select specific things like your bank routing number, okay, your tax file numbers, your social security numbers, credit card numbers. There's a whole bunch of sensitive data types. IP addresses are considered sensitive in some countries and so on. So we pick up credit card numbers here. And now we decide, what do we want to do with this? So we're going to say notify the sender with a policy tip. We're going to say block the message. And you can see all the other conditions that I can select here. Redirect the message to a particular person, and so on. So there's a bunch of conditions that you can use and bunch of actions that you can use to manually create your DLP policies and select specifically what kind of data you want to prevent from going out of your organization. So let's take a look at what we just saw. We saw DLP templates. There are 40 pre-canned DLP templates for various regulations, things like PSI, DSS, things like, if you go to aka.ms/DLP templates, you'll get a list of all these 40 templates that are included. You can also import DLP templates from third parties. There are third-party software vendors that are making these templates. So if you don't find something that you see here, you can import it from a third party. Or you can build your own. Now, this supports regular expressions, which is much more powerful than Exchange 2010. So a lot of things that you tried out with regex didn't work in 2010. If now you're familiar with .NET regex, It's the same implementation in Exchange 2013 and Exchange Online. So all of that is going to work. Sensitive content detection, like I showed you, there's a whole bunch of sensitive content types defined, things like credit card numbers. Now, the detection of this content goes not just to your message content, which is text, but I'm going to show you in a little bit if somebody decides to zip the file and send it, if somebody tries to change the file attachment extension. So if it's a doc file and I call it a Excel file, XLS or whatever, it's still going to be able to detect all that. And finally, it's extensible. So third parties can define their data types, and you can use those solutions in your DLP. So we just went through the DLP policy rules. They're built on transport rules, but they're phenomenally more powerful than what simple transport rules were. They just allow you to do way, way more things than transport rules did. Supports discovery also. So when you have an e-discovery request, you can use the same DLP policies to figure out if data is leaving your organization and audit those events. We'll take a look at some of the auditing reports and options available. We just went through creation of the rule already in the demo. The other thing you can do is apply RMS protection. And that allows you to control the rights that the recipient of that email will have. So the email matches my description of sensitive data type. Now, I don't want it leaving my organization, or I want even within my organization that data to be restricted. So I can apply an RMS policy, or what is known as information rights management, to say who has access to such information. You can define financial data going to only a group of people in the finance department, and so on. You can say what they can do with that email. Can they print it out? You can block printing. You can block, you know, cutting and pasting, and so on. So it protects your information within or outside the organization. And that usage rights travel with the information. So let's say somebody tries to forward, if you've not blocked forwarding of a message, that usage rights is going to go with the message. Unlike SMIME messages, where people encrypt a message, somebody decrypts it, and once it's decrypted, you know, anybody can do whatever they want with that message. The DLP reporting, comprehensive view of not only violations of DLP policies, inbound and outbound, okay, which rules were they in violation of? You know, so you have your HIPAA or your PSI DSS or GLBA and whatever other regulations that you created your rules around. Now, each incident is not only alerted by email, you can also get reporting on how many violations occurred over a period of time. And that helps your compliance efforts. So preventing information from leaving organization to actually being able to preserve information and do e-discovery. Because one of the goals or the basic goal of this entire compliance effort is to assist with e-discovery. Now, before Exchange 2013 and Exchange Online, current versions, you had these different data repositories, and you had to perform discovery in each one of them. Okay? Now, reviewing that data costs, because you're paying a lawyer an hourly fee or a bunch of lawyers an hourly fee to review data, right? So the goal is here to be able to do discovery from a single console across these different repositories to reduce the cost of discovery. We'll take a look at some of the features and how that's done. Also allow legal teams to do this without IT people doing it. Because in the past, people wanted to search Exchange mailbox data, they would go to the IT guy and say, hey, do this search. Now you get legal or HR or any appropriate non-technical person or department can be delegated the permissions to preserve data, to search for data, to identify data that meets your criteria, and to put it on hold for e-discovery. So that's the paradox between volume, where you search for something and you get a lot of data. And now how to bring that down using different refiners so you only have the most relevant data from eDiscovery. So let's go take a look at the eDiscovery Center, and hopefully we won't run into the same password thing because we're already logged in. So let's start with the Legal Discovery Center. Now, this is a site created in SharePoint. When you're in on-premises, you're going to integrate SharePoint and Exchange and Link. It's all done using OAuth authentication. And you go to SharePoint, and you create this site called the Legal Discovery Center, and you manage e-discovery cases. So from just doing blanket e-discovery, now there is a workflow built into it where you can perform a discovery, you can basically identify the data, you can refine the data, you can preview the data, and then you can put that data on hold and eventually export the data. So typically, if you were new, you would start here with create a new case. Okay, give it a title. Let's say Project Contoso or whatever. You can give it a URL. So each case becomes its own separate website, sort of, where you can browse to. So let's say Contoso 2, English. It's an e-discovery case. And I'm going to show this in the parent side. And there you have created a new case. Now, once you've created the new case, you're going to go ahead and identify data sources that you want to perform an e-discovery on. So while this thing is creating it, oh, there we go. That was quick. Okay, so now you have this case. It's its own website, Project Contoso 2. Now I'm going to go ahead and identify the resources, the data that I want to discover. So let's say Contoso data. Okay, I'm going to specify sources, which can include Exchange mailboxes. It can include SharePoint data. It can include URLs. So let's go ahead and select a mailbox here. You can type it in here, SA, and have a lookup, which looks up your global address list. Didn't find it. So let's just go ahead and click the address book like you would do.
Can I include a link as well?
I'll talk about that. So what it does with Link is basically Link is archiving to Exchange. So it's a single repository. When you say a mailbox, it'll include the Link data. No. And that's on the next slide. So let's finish this demo, and I can show that to you. Okay. There we go. So I have a mailbox here, Sarah. I'll include that just for this test, but you can include more mailboxes. You can specify distribution lists and, you know, have all members of the distribution list included. You can do SharePoint locations. So let's say Contoso. If there is any SharePoint, okay, no match. Let's just do the mailbox for now, and I can show you what it looks like. So this is now from SharePoint going to Exchange and searching that mailbox. Okay. Now I'm going to specify, see, it's found 175 messages, and it's 6.5 megs. Now I'm going to go ahead and filter that for, let's say, finance. What I'm doing here is narrowing down the amount of data that I'm going to get. So I say apply filter. Okay, it's reduced it to 22 items only from 175. So multiply that over the number of mailboxes. Okay. Now I'm going to say 22 is still too much, because if I was searching, let's say, 500 mailboxes, that would still be a lot of data. So how about this was related to acquisition? And let's apply the filter. And I can further narrow it down to 7 items. Now, I can preview the results, which is going to go and show you an overview of those messages. I can now place, once I'm satisfied and look at the preview, these are the messages I want, I can place them on hold. These are the messages that it picked up from Exchange. If there was any SharePoint content, then I would go to the SharePoint, and right now nothing matches that search, but that data would be put on hold as well. So using one console, I'm able to do this search, I'm able to preview the data, I'm able to narrow down my search, and I'm able to place the data on hold. And what happens when we put things on hold is what we're going to see next. But let's save this eDiscovery set. Okay, so once I've put this data on hold, now I'm going to go and perform my queries. Okay, let's give this query a name. Let's say search one, and now I can further refine this, give it a start date, end date, senders, recipients of a message, look at some advanced query options. You have deduplication built in. So when you finally export this data, it's going to be significantly less data. Okay, this is a list of my messages. And I can click export and export this data. It's exported in EDRM approved format, so complies with all your legal requirements for eDiscovery. SharePoint documents will get exported as documents, of course, as a zip file, I think. It does zip it up, right? Okay. Web pages will get exported as MHT files. Exchange data will get exported as PST files. And all of that with an XML manifest will be in that export folder. So there we go. We're using one console, searching Exchange, searching SharePoint, and searching archived link data. So we'll just quickly go over this because I showed you in the demo. To recap, you're searching based on particular eDiscovery cases. Now you're placing these items on an in-place hold. And what that in-place hold does is allow people to, you know, have this data on hold, but the actual user, it's all transparent to him. They can edit it, they can, you know, do whatever to it, but there's a separate copy of that data being maintained when it's on hold. So when you do an eDiscovery, not only will you see the data that was on hold, you're also going to see any modifications that were made to it are also going to show up in your eDiscovery. This is the eDiscovery within Exchange if you didn't have SharePoint. Now, this is introduced as multi-mailbox search in Exchange 2010. In 2013, this is turned into in-place eDiscovery. And it's integrated with the in-place hold, so you can do one search and search the data within Exchange. If you don't have SharePoint, obviously, you're not going to be able to do anything with SharePoint. This is just Exchange. The other thing to note about in-place hold is, in Exchange 2010, and we'll take a look at the next slide, we allowed you to do a blanket hold, which was called litigation hold. I check off a user. Everything is on hold. Nothing that the user does is going to be deleted. So in Exchange 2013, you have the flexibility, and in Exchange Online, you have the flexibility to do a time-based hold. Now, what time-based hold says is keep the data for X amount of time. Then there's a query-based hold, which says only keep data that matches this query parameters for X amount of time if you want, or keep it forever. So these are the different variants of hold, litigation hold, legacy from Exchange 2010, indefinite in-place hold, which is kind of like litigation hold in that everything is placed on hold. Then there is the time-based hold and the query-based hold. And how do you manage this? Because this is only Exchange, you will manage it in Exchange Admin Center and Exchange Management Shell. If you have SharePoint in the mix, you can manage this whole thing from the eDiscovery Center that we just saw. Now, maintaining records in SharePoint. So SharePoint has this concept of record center, where you can, so there is, we saw in-place hold. This thing is where you submit records to be held. Okay, now you can manually submit records, which could be your documents in SharePoint, they could be any other data that you have in SharePoint, or in the next screen we'll see you can also define automatic rules, just like sort of like what you have in Exchange in terms of retention policy. This is more based on a lot of different other parameters. So using these new rules, you can say, you know, for example, if a message is like, if a document is a press release, what is the status of that press release? Is it an approved press release? Then hold it for so long, submit it to the record center to be retained for so long. So we're saying here, match a press release, specify any alternate content type names. So a press release may be called a number of different things. You can add all of that to this list. What is the status, whether it's a draft, whether it's submitted, approved? And then when it's saved, how do you want to save it? And it can automatically create separate folders within SharePoint to basically save data for this particular rule, all done automatically. So to recap then, these are the different features that we just went through, and the different SKUs for on-premises, Exchange 2013 and SharePoint 2013, and online, Plan 1 and Plan 2, and the features that they enable. So for instance, records management, eDiscovery Center is available in enterprise in on-premises, and in online, it's only available in Plan 1 and Plan 2. Similarly for in-place hold, one change was eDiscovery in Exchange used to be enterprise in 2010, and at some point we allowed it on standard CALs as well. So other than that, that's the feature matrix. So I believe we have some time for questions. Yes. It has to be Exchange 2013 on both sides. Yes?
For SharePoint, will it also do e-discovery for wikis and blogs?
Any content that you have in SharePoint, so things like documents, but things like SharePoint sites, things like URLs that you feed SharePoint, lists, it'll do e-discovery of all those things. Okay, so I thought I had a slide in there. Somehow it either didn't show up or I totally missed it. What you do with Link is, in Exchange 2013 and Link 2013, or let's track back, how did it work before? The user had to go to his client and say, save my conversations, which is not much of a retention mechanism, but that's what we had earlier. Now, with 2013 Wave, what happens is, it happens at the server level. You place a user on hold, all the Link conversations are now getting archived within Exchange in the recoverable items folder, which the user doesn't see. So when you perform an e-discovery, all that archived Link content is also getting discovered, but it's all residing in Exchange. Now, Link also has its own archiving, so it's an either or, whether I want to do it in Link or I want to push all that to Exchange. Now, obviously, if you store it all in Link, you cannot search it from Exchange. It's a separate thing you have to do within Link itself. But once stored in Exchange, you can also go to SharePoint and search it from there. Yes?
Back to the some of the rules that you had set up for DLP.
Yes.
I'm just thinking about if those rules actually change somehow with government-wise or something like that.
With what?
There were some rules for the federal rules, like credit cards.
Yes. I can't answer that. I am thinking we would, but I don't know for sure. I could get back to you on that if you email me. Yes?
Are you leveraging FOSS for the e-discovery within SharePoint, or is it SharePoint's own?
FOSS?
FOSS indexing server.
Okay. So the underlying search is all the same now across Exchange and SharePoint. It's what you called FAST earlier. It's now called Search Foundation. So SharePoint already used it. Now Exchange also uses Search Foundation. Exchange Search is now built on Search Foundation. So all the data is indexed in Exchange, in the content indexes within Exchange. The SharePoint data resides in its own content indexes, obviously. But the language that you use to search both is similar. You know, if you wanted to get too fancy, it's called KQL, keyword query language, and you can use that syntax to search from SharePoint or from Exchange, and it should give you similar results.
So do you see a time where you'd be able to bring in like file services and stuff as well, inside to be able to kind of do a true search over just a SharePoint website, Exchange, and file service?
That's pretty much what's happening right now. Unless I'm not understanding your question.
I didn't see file server, like URL to a file server share or something.
Oh, okay. So, again, I think you would have documents in SharePoint, or you can have SharePoint index those, right? And once that does, you know, that can be included. Yes, somebody in the back? Well, as long as SharePoint can talk to the file share, as long as you can add a file share to SharePoint, that should work.
So it's file share within SharePoint?
Yes. Yes. Do you have any?
It has to be indexed by SharePoint.
It has to be indexed by SharePoint. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's when you see it the first time, it's it's pretty remarkable. Is when you do an e-discovery from on-premises, if you're in a hybrid environment, it's going to go and search your cloud mailboxes as well. If you have an environment where primary mailbox is on-premises and your archive is in the cloud, it's going to search that as well. There's another hand raised back there. Yes, it is. It is. So in SharePoint, to be able to search Exchange mailboxes, you're going to have to give them the same discovery management permissions that you normally do in Exchange.
But Exchange to SharePoint.
Yes. Oh, I mean, from Exchange, you cannot search SharePoint. So there's only one search from SharePoint where SharePoint does itself and Exchange. Exchange cannot search SharePoint. The e-discovery center that you saw is a SharePoint site.
Do you have to just configure it like a federated search with Exchange to be searchable?
Yes. It uses standard OPATH authentication. So when you install Exchange and you install SharePoint 2013, obviously both versions, there's a very simple procedure that'll allow you to configure the authentication between the two. Yes?
And the RMAC is still applying to the person logging into the search
center? On SharePoint?
Right, when they go in to do the search across SharePoint or Exchange.
So SharePoint has its own permissions of who you allow to log in into SharePoint, right? Whether this given e-discovery case that we created, who has access to it, and all that. That's all controlled by SharePoint. But whether the logged-in user can actually search Exchange data or not is governed by the RBAC permissions in Exchange. So they have to be a member of a discovery management role group.
So what's the behavior that you would experience within SharePoint if you used either a stubbing or a remote blob storage solution to archive SharePoint?
So to archive SharePoint, not Exchange?
No, SharePoint.
Okay. I'm not aware of archiving SharePoint via stubbing. Can you elaborate on how it does it?
Stubbing is the old way of archiving SharePoint, where we take the data out and we just leave a pointer behind. Remote blob is the new way, using the new versions of SQL, where we leave a meta pointer to the data, but the blob file is moved to out of the database, so you can reduce the size of your SQL databases.
Okay. So it's kind of similar to what Exchange does with stubbing solutions, is if the data is not in these data repositories, it's not going to index it. If it's not going to index it, it's not going to return results. And the whole idea with this is to keep data in place.
So the whole problem there, though, is that you have explosive growth of your SQL servers, which you keep on high-speed storage. So a lot of enterprises are moving to an archiving solution so they can lower the cost of their enterprise-class storage for SharePoint and maintain it in some form of an object repository.
Right. And, you know, for now, I mean, there is no answer to being able to index.
Okay.
Any other questions? Yes.
Just a comment on that. I work for Symantec. We do Enterprise Vault for SharePoint. And our stubs will actually redirect so that the content can be fully indexed in the archive. So basically, the content will still be found in the SharePoint search. Just wanted to answer the question from us.
OK.
And I believe the same is true with remote blob storage as well.
With what?
Remote blob storage.
It will find it?
Yes.
Which product is that?
Enterprise Vault for SharePoint.
So it just does the same thing with the pointer?
Yeah, basically, whenever it's indexed, the content gets redirected to the archive. So metadata and the content will be fully indexed.
And just use shortcuts as well, same thing.
Yeah, sure. I don't know if I'm on there. As long as the shortcut is in place, it will fully index the content and the metadata.
Or remote blob and
I believe with remote blob, I can speak for Enterprise Vault for SharePoint. I don't know for sure about remote blob storage solutions.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Let's see how we're doing on time. Any other questions so far? Yes. Can I ask you to come to the mic, if you don't mind?
I don't know if this is outside your specialty, but related to link and how link messages archive, you mentioned, as in 2010, you have to check the conversation history box, and it's not real reliable. Everything might not get there. On the server side, does it always enable everything? Like, is it always saving all of the conversations, and we can just apply retention rules to those, just like any
yes.
other
yes.
message if we chose to use email as our link?
No. If you enable archiving, if you place a mailbox on hold or a user on hold, it's archiving everything. You can do that, yeah. You can apply a retention policy that says archive link conversation, just keep it for 6 months or 3 months or whatever.
So if you don't have hold, it will store it in your conversation history folder. And if you place it on hold, it will be inside your recoverable otherwise it is always archived.
Thanks.
Okay, a few more. No more questions? Then we're good. I have some coupons here for t-shirts. If you're interested, just come on over and you can collect it from the concierge desk at the office booth. Thank you.